All right, Mr. LaFond, good morning.
Good morning. If it pleases the court, I'm Matthew LaFondi for and on behalf of the retired police officers reemployed by the District of Columbia. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. There has been a long time conflict between a public policy position that retired annuitants should not be able to essentially slide back into their same original jobs and double dip, that is to be paid their pensions and be paid a new salary. In conflict with this public policy position is an economic drive to allow persons who are especially qualified to have these types of jobs because of their prior experience to come back and obtain new jobs, possibly from the same employer in which they are especially qualified. They create these huge economic disincentives where the person essentially gets no new salary as a result of their pension. This is reflected particularly in a series of patchwork legislation that has occurred over the years, which has taken away these anti-double dipping laws and created situations where this economic disincentive is undermined and permitting these persons to properly take reemployment with their same agency and have that agency enjoy the benefits. One of these laws is the DC Act 15489 of 2004, in which the District of Columbia recognized that former employees who are federal annuitants of the District of Columbia eliminate that reduction in pay the same as any other federal annuitant. So, for instance, if a person were to come from the Department of Transportation and they have received a retirement benefit from the Department of Transportation, they do not have an overt economic advantage over a person who came from the District of Columbia Department of Transportation, who is then offset by virtue of the fact that they have a pre-home rule annuity. The folks at the Protective Services Police Department were solicited specifically because of their special skills that were garnered over decades of experience with the Metropolitan Police Department. And they came to these jobs upon a promise that they would be paid both their federal pensions, the pre-home rule District of Columbia pensions, now paid by a federal trust fund as a result of the 1997 law 10533, and would receive their, in addition, their new salaries. The District of Columbia, starting in January 1st of 2012, employed the language of the now superseded 1979 Act, which is found at DC Code 57123E, to state that these persons had to maintain an offset of their salaries by the amount of their pensions. The 1979 Act came at a time when the District of Columbia was obtaining various rights under home rule. These rights included the funding and administration of pre-home rule annuitants in their pension plans. That is to say that these folks were essentially federal employees prior to home rule, employed by the District of Columbia. They come to this, they then become District of Columbia employees under home rule, but they now have federal pension rights, which the District of Columbia was responsible for. This created a huge problem in the 1980s where there were a couple of billion dollars in unfunded liabilities for these pensions. As a result, in 1997, we had this curious situation where the federal government takes back those particular responsibilities from the District of Columbia, and all pre-1997 District of Columbia employees are then paid by the federal government as a federal trust fund benefit. We now ask the district that we ask this court to reverse the district's court's holding, ignoring its exclusive venue provision of DC Code 181502A, which I discuss at page 49 of my opening brief, which it speaks to whether or not 5 7.23E is inconsistent and therefore superseded by the 1997 law. This is absolutely a proper...
The 97 law refers to those that are paid pursuant to 5 U.S.C. 8331, right?
There's a couple of things there. What I refer to...
That's what it says, right?
Yes, that there is a... That is the provision under one...
And I didn't think these officers were being paid their pensions pursuant to 5 U.S.C. 8331.
This is part of the problem of having this patchwork remedy. We have a situation where the 5723E language comes in 1979,
right,
when the District of Columbia assumes responsibility for the pre-home rule annuitants. These folks are getting paid by the District of Columbia, despite the fact this is a prior federal obligation.
That I think what you're getting at is it might be an oversight in the 97, if I have the year right, law. But
I wouldn't say it's an oversight.
The 97 law, by its terms, refers to those pensions paid pursuant to 8331. Right?
The 97 law also states that any inconsistent language from the 79 law is hereby superseded. And we assert to the court today, and have in the briefs, that this matter is, in fact, this language of 723 is, in fact, inconsistent, because it speaks to a time when the District of Columbia was paying these pensions. We assert as a fundamental issue that the District of Columbia cannot offset pensions it does not pay, and that the language of the 2004 Act 15489 speaks very plainly in its preamble to say we intend to treat federal annuitants who work for the District of Columbia the same as federal annuitants who didn't previously work for the District of Columbia.
Now, this is your argument that they're entitled to both their full salary and the pension. You also have a narrower argument, I think, that three of them are entitled to $455 a week.
Yes, and
plus their pensions.
And
that's your Fair Labor Standards Act argument.
That's correct.
On that, I guess it turns on the term compensated and the term salary basis in the regulation.
In 1947, Congress reacted to some expansive interpretation of FSLA in terms of what the Supreme Court was considering work and a work week. And then it wasn't enacted the Portal to Portal Act, in which it created a very, very narrow definition of or excluded a lot of things that have subsequently been interpreted to mean if it is not pay for work performed, it is not subject, it is not part of what FLSA is. So, for instance, if you were to get on the company bus, you would check in at a remote location, get on the company bus, and ride to your work site. That, under the Portal Act, would not be pay for work performed. And the consistently has been determined by every case that I have seen since the enactment of the Portal Act that if you are not doing something for your employer at that moment, in furtherance of its business as your job, that is not part of your work.
Just so I understand your position on the remedy for this argument, suppose we agreed with only this argument that you make, that would entitle the officers not to their full salary plus the pension, but rather to $455 a week plus the pension.
It is certainly a lesser
right
remedy.
Which is probably why you started with the other argument.
Yes. I would like to get everyone back their full salaries. We rely in part on FLSA because it gets us the federal venue. And we want, while we assert the exclusive venue provisions under 1.815.02, we also assert that FLSA gets our foot in the door to proceed before the district court on that point. And it's an interesting thing that the 11th Circuit said last week in a case called LaMonica versus Safe Hurricane Shutters is that there the Act, FLSA, unequivocally provides for this remedy, that the court cannot sidestep or fashion some alternative remedy. They have to be given that money back, and that the provisions of FLSA, the remedies
that money meaning $455 a week.
The $455 a week. And again, that secures what has been challenged as our federal question jurisdiction here. We don't assert any other theory of jurisdiction. We're not calling this a diversity case or anything of that sort. And the you'll see in the court's, the district court's dismissal of the claim that they are eschewing the pending claims, the non-federal question claims. And they're saying that the question of how we interpret 5723E is a question of District of Columbia law, and we say this is not a federal question. We assert that it is because it comes under the 1997 Act, and the 1997 Act has district court as the exclusive venue. And this also goes to our question of whether we've exhausted administrative remedies. District of Columbia law prohibits a claimant from pursuing an administrative remedy at the same time as pursuing a judicial remedy from the same facts. Since we came here on FLSA and we came here seeking injunctive relief, something that the CPMA of the District of Columbia does not provide, therefore, we are stuck in district court litigating all of those claims together. I see that I run over my time.
All right, we'll give you a couple minutes to reply. Mr. Love.
Thank you, good morning. Richard Love for the District of Columbia. The retired Metropolitan Police officers here receive an annuity from the Police Officer and Firefighter Retirement Fund, and therefore they're subject to the offset that's set forth in DC Code 5723E, not the provisions of DC Code 161103B, which exempts annuitants in the separate civil service retirement and disability.
The DC law, and I understand that's responding to the first argument, but yeah. On the FLSA argument, the DC law can't trump, of course, federal law on that. And the federal law refers to people being compensated at least $455 a week. And my question, my concern for your position on that issue in this case is, how can your pension for a prior job be considered compensation for your current job? Doesn't make much sense to me.
Well, I think the basis for the employee's argument is that they're not receiving pay for work performed because they're entitled to their pension regardless of whether they work or they don't work.
And exactly. So if you're already entitled to the pension, how can it be considered
because
prior job?
Because you're not. Mm-hmm. That's where I think the relevance of the district law is. It's not that it trumps the FLSA, but they're not entitled to collect both their full pension and their full salary.
Could DC simply say, we're going to pay you $455 a week or more in salary, but because you've come back, we're going to reduce your pension? Is there an ERISA problem or some other problem with that? In other words, that would avoid the Fair Labor Standards Act problem, but it may create another statutory problem for you by reducing pension benefits.
Well, I think the two are relevant. Two issues that are relevant, at least to this analysis, is the fact that, as we said, I think the law requires this offset. They don't have a continuous
right.
They don't have a continuing entitlement to it. Mm-hmm. Therefore, they can't say it's not pay for work performed. They had constructive notice of this statute.
In your theory, are they reducing the pension or are they limiting the salary for the current employment?
Well, the statute reads, it says that the salary shall be reduced such that the pension and the salary equal to the salary. I think it's somewhat form over substance. The bottom line...
Well, form matters a lot in ERISA law and in FLSA law, it would seem to me.
Well, but the bottom line, I think, as the district court found, is they actually receive far in excess of $455 a week.
The language of the statute, it's not what they receive, right? I mean, as Judge Kavanaugh has pointed out, we're talking about it's a narrower idea than that. It's compensation. And them getting the annuity is not compensation for what they're doing now.
Well, but the annuity, by per the statute, is factored into the equation so that they receive in salary an amount that's necessary.
And the issue here is whether they're covered by the Fair Labor Standards Act, and if they're getting less than $455 a week for their job that they're getting right now, they're not covered by the Fair Labor Standards Act. That's the problem you have. Are we supposed to be looking at the annuity as part of their compensation for this job? And as Judge Kavanaugh said, how can you say that it's compensation for this job when it's not? It accrued for something else they did at a different place.
Well, it is per the statute because they're required, if they are going to be rehired into a district position.
No, I agree. The statute is fine. All we're talking about now is whether they fall under the Fair Labor Standards Act and are entitled to minimum wage and overtime. That's it. And the way you have structured the statute, and maybe you should have thought of a different way of structuring the statute. Other jurisdictions facing the same problem have approached it in different ways that haven't run afoul of the FLSA. The district appears not to have done that.
Yeah, has any other state done it this way?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I'm not aware of how states fashion the offset.
We've looked, and the answer is no. You're alone in doing this way, as far as we can find.
And interestingly, that if you look at the language of the D.C. provision, which is what you're talking about, right, it does distinguish between the sum of the annuitant's annuity under this subchapter and compensation for such employment. So even under the language of the D.C. code, it reflects a common sense understanding that your compensation for the current employment is distinct from your annuity for the past employment.
Yeah, but I think it also, the bottom line is that the statute requires that the salary actually received, mm-hmm. whether it comes from the pension or a part of pension and salary, that the salary is required to be equal to that otherwise payable for the position that's held by such annuitant. I think that's the bottom line, is that it requires an amount equal to the salary for the position that the annuitant is rehired into. And we're also not dealing with a collateral source here, unlike, I think, the employee's argument. They're not retired and receiving a pension payment from General Motors. This is a pension that they received for their work as Metropolitan Police Department officers. The District of Columbia contributed 7% every paycheck throughout their tenure as a police officer. The fact that
D.C. gave exorbitant pensions, and maybe that was a mistake. A lot of jurisdictions are finding themselves in that position, but that doesn't necessarily excuse paying for the current job below minimum wage. I wouldn't think, just reading. Other state law that does this, and just reading the regulations, the federal regulations, the term is compensation. And again, I'm back with my common sense point. I have trouble seeing compensation for your current job being satisfied by a pension for a prior job. It just doesn't make sense to me. Does it make sense to you?
Well, I understand the concern, but I think when you look at the intent of the FLSA is to protect our hourly wage workers.
Well, you're essentially getting these people for free. And the FLSA doesn't like that.
you're not getting them for free. I mean, I think
that's because you're going to owe the pension amount regardless. And so you're getting them to work for you for no additional payment beyond the, right?
Well, I think the flip side to that...
Wait, am I right, though? You're getting them to work for no additional money. In other words, you're essentially getting them to work for zero.
Well, you're getting them to work for the amount that the district was paying in an annuity, subject to a statute that provide clear notice that that would be the effect of them accepting a new position.
But you still have the FLSA, which says there's a minimum below which you cannot go for these types of employees.
Yeah, but again, I would say...
How many folks are we talking about here?
But well,
beyond these plaintiffs. I mean, is this a large class?
Oh, I don't have... I don't think the class was intended to capture solely the FLSA individuals, the three... This is even applicable. So some of them receive a salary that's so much larger than their pension that the FLSA doesn't even come into play.
But if on your notice point, if DC said, we're going to pay you $3 an hour, that doesn't exempt you from the FLSA, right?
No, it wouldn't.
So,
but again, the statute...
I don't see the notice really helping you much here.
Well, it's not just notice. It's also that the statute requires that the salary guarantees that the salary for the rehired be paid. So the offset is tailored to ensure that they receive the amount of that a particular position, which is in excess of the FLSA threshold.
Just so I'm clear on this, I think you answered this, but they're getting no addition, under your theory, they would get no additional money beyond what they would get from their pension for their work.
Well, I think factually that's not true. That may be true for one of the three.
Or they're getting additional money, but it's below what the FLSA would require.
If you just looked at salary as opposed to, all three of them,
that's three.
His argument, yes.
Any more questions?
No.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. LaFond, if you have anything in reply, why don't you take a minute?
Thank you, Your Honor. I just to expand upon Mr. Love's point that somehow 5723E can supersede the FLSA, that the law, District of Columbia law, says that these people are going to have their pensions offset to a point that apparently, unlike any other state, as Judge Kavanaugh has pointed out, permits a violation of FLSA. I don't think that is permissible given the broad remedial language and intent of FLSA. It is intended, as has been pointed out in a multitude of cases, that it is intended to create a bottom line threshold and a notice that, as Judge Kavanaugh pointed out, of $3 an hour does not obviate the obligations under FLSA. The district court seemed to make a great point upon whether it is, in fact, the pension that's being offset or it's the salary that's being offset. And I pointed to the Glaxiola case, which was quoting Arrighia, which is an 11th Circuit case from 2002, that these de facto deductions, the mechanism in which they operate, is of no consequence either to the FLSA argument here today or as to whether there is a cognizable action under the 1997 Act. The end result is exactly the same, that these folks are working for for free when they were promised maybe as much as $100,000 a year for their services. And that is
the FLSA doesn't promise them $100,000. $455 a week.
But we assert that the construction of the 1997 Act provides them for both their full salary and their. And it is not the District of Columbia which paid that 7%. It was the federal government, because the District of Columbia as a separate entity did not exist at the time that these folks were first employed. For these reasons and the reasons that I've set forth in my brief, we ask that this matter be reversed and remanded to the district court. Thank you.
Thank you.
consent.